All right, you guys, I am currently struggling with a pinched nerve in my neck, and if you have ever had one, you know the pain. So I am feeling super thankful for today's sponsor, Tenassi. Tenassi's CBD CBDA is 2 times better than CBD alone and better than over-the-counter ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and aspirin. It helps soothe and relieve my aches and pains, like my pinched nerve, and it's great for sleep and anxiety, so I put it on right before bed. Tenassi was discovered by a team of chemists and biologists at Middle Tennessee State University, and 5% of all revenue is given back to the university partner for ongoing research. It is THC-free and comes in a range of products. I love the topicals, but you can also choose from soft gels, gummies, and tinctures. Satisfaction is guaranteed. Try Tenassi for 30 days, and if you don't love it, you get a full refund. Go to Tenassi.com and use code MOM to get 25% off at checkout. That's TANASI.com to get 25% off your first order with promo code MOM. Since learning the truth about alcohol over 4 years ago, I've become pretty skeptical about anything that seems too good to be true. You know, like alcohol. If you're like me and you can spot a too good to be true health hack from a mile away, congrats, you're a skeptic too. Ritual knows that every good skeptic deserves a multivitamin that exceeds our standards. I take Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus every morning because it has high quality and traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. It's gentle on an empty stomach and has a minty essence in every bottle that helps make taking my multis actually enjoyable. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/sobermom. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/sobermom for 25% off. Hi, welcome to the Sober Mom Life podcast. I'm your host, Suzanne, of My Kind of Sweet and the Sober Mom Life on Instagram. If you are a mama who has questioned your relationship with alcohol at times, if you're wondering if maybe it's making motherhood harder, this is for you. I will be having candid, honest, funny conversations with other moms who have also thought, maybe motherhood is better without alcohol. Is it possible? We'll chat and we'll talk about all things sobriety and how we've found freedom in sobriety. I don't consider myself an alcoholic. You don't have to either. And maybe life is brighter without alcohol. I hope you will join us on this journey, and I'm so excited to get started. Hello and welcome to the Real Sober Mom Chats on the Sober Mom Life podcast. You guys know these stories are near and dear to my heart. These are stories from women who are in the Sober Mom Life community, in the Sober Mom Life Cafe. And for a lot of them, it's the first time telling their story. These are real moms. It's like the Real Housewives, but without the booze. Don't forget, if you want to share your story, come and join us. We now have 2 options for memberships. We have the Sober Mom Life community. For $5.95 a month, you get to connect with sober and sober curious women all day long in the chat and in the feed. And then you also get access to our Tuesday peer support Zoom meeting at 11 a.m. Central. And also the cafe. The cafe is $25 a month and you get so many meetings. You get access to 8 weekly peer support meetings plus our monthly book club. You get your own feed and chat where you get to connect with the ladies and just so many other amazing things. Come and join us. We would love to have you and enjoy the Real Sober Moms. Welcome to the Sober Mom Life podcast.
Well, thank you.
Yes, I'm so happy you're here.
I'm not sure how I feel about it, but we'll just roll with it. Like I said, I just lived in denial till I got myself to this moment. I'm like, you say what you say and it'll be meant to be.
I'm so glad you're here. When I saw you pop up on my schedule, I'm like, thank the Lord, finally Kelly's coming on, because I know so much about you and you are so beautifully vulnerable and at the retreat. Like, I adore you. I don't know your full story, though. And so I was like, this is going to be such a treat that I get to sit down with you and hear your story.
Well, thank you. I've been thinking about it since December, and I kind of was like, oh, well, maybe I'll get my stuff together a little better, you know, before I like talk on a podcast. And then I kind of realized a few things, like number one, that's never going to happen.
Yes,
and
good.
Number two, all the best stories are from the middle. The packaged up little bow at the end, like I had this problem, I solved it, here you go. Those are good, but they're so much better from the middle.
Yes. And, you know, I always tell the moms who come on here, which I think you guys are the bravest because, as I always say, like these stories aren't the polished stories, right? You don't have talking points. You haven't, like I have told my story so many times and I've made sense of it in my head for it to like make sense. But the women who come on here and you tell your story so beautifully and like you know your story. You don't have to prepare. You don't have to, like, this is just you. And so you come here and you are open and honest and tell your story, and it's great. That's all you got to do. I know. Okay, deep breath.
Okay.
Okay, before we talk about sobriety and where you're at, which I love, we're going back. We're going back and talking about alcohol.
Oh, poor little 14-year-old me. What was I thinking? But what were all of us thinking?
We weren't, right? 14. Think about that, like a baby. 14-year-old Kelly. Oh, I want to hug her.
I have second child's turning 13 on Friday, and I'm like, oh, my God. Like, it's hard to believe these babies in my house. I'm like, I was doing some crazy stuff, and it's nuts. So going back to drinking, I think I was like in my freshman year of high school. I decided to try it. And to be honest, until my 20s, I didn't really like drinking. I did it a little bit here and there. You're going to love this, you and your moderation. I started moderating in high school.
Like, did you really?
I did because I didn't like drinking and everybody else did. I liked pot.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
I was in more control. I mean, one of the first times I drank, I was given grain alcohol at a stranger's house. I passed out on a couch and I woke up to this stranger like carrying me down to the basement. And my friends intervened and they were like, oh, hell no. Like, she's going with us. We're leaving. And so I learned very early on drinking can lead me to like some sketch situations. So,
yeah, like literally a dark basement.
Yes.
With a stranger. How terrifying is that? And good thing you had good friends.
I know. Thank God for, you know, girlfriends.
Yes. Right? Thank God for girlfriends. Can we all give it up for girlfriends who, when we were out of our minds, could step in? And hopefully everyone listening had those. I definitely had those. Like in college, they helped keep me safe.
100%. And so I drank some, but I was probably 16, 17 years old, going into the bathroom with my beer can, dumping the beer out and putting water in just so people would stop pushing alcohol on me because I was trying to smoke pot and keep up with the boys. I'm going to puke and then have to go home if I keep drinking this crap.
Yeah. You liked pot better. Did you like just how it made you feel better? Because that first drinking experience, I'm sure, was like terrifying. And so you were like, yeah, no, I don't want that.
Yeah. Well, I'm now starting to see, I actually just a few months ago got diagnosed with ADHD. And I'm starting to like look back now. I'm like, oh, no wonder. I think the pot helped slow down my brain. And especially since I'm learning that some of like the symptoms and things with ADHD can come on with hormonal changes. Well, no wonder as a teenage girl with all that going on, and now that I'm here hitting like perimenopause age, that my brain's like, woohoo, it's a party
in
here.
Totally. That seems to be common that like women in middle age are getting diagnosed with ADHD or ADD.
Because in the 80s and 90s, I don't think it was like they didn't even realize there was stuff going on with us because
they didn't know anything.
Well, except for the like little white boy who couldn't sit in his seat. All the studies are based on those.
Like the trouble, like the quote unquote troublemaker, right?
Yeah. And I feel like what they're looking at now, where instead of being able to not sit in your seat, it's your brain that's hyperactive. And so, I mean, I wasn't a good student in high school. I graduated because I was quiet and sweet and I just smiled and put on the show, looked like I can't tell you how many adults told me I had a good head on my shoulders. I was stoned for 5 years.
Yeah.
I did not have a good head on my shoulders at that point.
That you were like, oh, if you only knew.
But you learn to put on that show. I definitely think that, especially my home environment, my parents were very opposite. My dad was very type B, laid back, and my mom was very type A, and I just was so friggin' confused that I just learned to put on a show for what people wanted to see, so everybody would leave me alone and I could go do what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. And so then it worked. Like, everyone was like, oh, Kelly, she's a sweet girl. She's fine. Like, nothing to see. And then you were like, no, I just want to get stoned.
Oh, yeah. And I had rage issues. I used to go to yard sales and buy glass stuff.
Okay, I cannot see this.
Oh, my God. I used to break stuff just to make myself feel better.
Okay, well, that just sounds fun. I mean, that does sound like a good, like, Thursday night, right? Like, now. Like, yes. I want to do that. Wait.
But now it's like I can look back and I'm like, I just had so much bottled up, I didn't know how to get it out. So I just had to buy cheap things to break.
Especially if they had you in this category, this box, right? Like, you are sweet. And sweet means, for a girl, it means you're going to be small. You're not going to be angry. You're going to be like, that's definitely, I was kind of put in that like, no. If you're too much, if you're too hard, that's not desirable. That's not what we want. Like, just be sweet and quiet.
100%. So I just did that. But then by the time I graduated high school and I tried to do college and I dropped out of 2 or 3 semesters, like, I just knew that I did not want to still be working at Lone Star Steakhouse asking people how they want their steak cooked in another 20 years. Like, I had to do something. And so I joined the military.
Wait, I did not know this.
Yes, I was in the Navy for 8 years. I was a gas turbine mechanic, and I was actually a drill instructor too.
Oh my, wait, this is wild. I love when I get to know people in sobriety and then they tell me their past, and I it takes a minute to wow, that's incredible.
The only problem with that is I had to drop the pot, and I was like, oh, this is a problem.
Right. Yeah,
that's not going to work.
Yeah, they didn't like that.
So that was, I think, where alcohol really like came into it, because I still needed something to like slow my brain down and like be able to interact with other people and party, and drugs were no longer an option. So alcohol it was.
Which is really interesting because, okay, so in the Navy, like, I guess I didn't, but it makes sense. You can drink in the military, but it does seem like, wow, that's an issue, right?
Oh, yeah. But I mean, technically, you're also having kids straight out of high school. And in the Navy, you are on metal boxes floating in the ocean. It's wild that it works, but it does.
This is a really stupid question. So when you're in the Navy, like, you were in the Navy, you were on a ship. Are all Navy people on a ship? Oh my gosh.
No. Also, you'll have like a sea to shore rotation. So even if you are on a ship, it's only for a certain amount of time.
Okay.
And then you transfer to shore, which is supposed to be like your downtime, which it depends on what duty station you go to. So yeah. And I mean, you didn't drink on the ship, even if you were like living on the ship.
Okay. So you were on a ship for periods at a time.
Yes. And so as I say, well, actually, I never lived on the ship because it was in dry dock when I got there. So we were in barracks. And then by the time everybody moved on the ship, I moved into an apartment with a guy that I ended up dating and marrying, but also a group of friends. So I lived in a 2-bedroom apartment with 4 guys for a year and a half.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow. And they were all military guys?
Yes. And it was a blast. It was just like living in a frat house, I'm sure.
Totally.
Except on a smaller scale. And people slept on the floor. People slept on couches. And we just made it work because that was better than sleeping in a room with like 20 to 40 people on the ship. So.
Yes. Oh, wow. And so drinking was like, everyone was pretty much drinking heavily?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just like normal life. Yeah. It's honestly the same thing, except you don't go to class all day. You go to work all day.
Right. Except you're like literally putting your life on the line for the country, which P.S. thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. If I had been smart, I would have stayed in and not gotten out. That would have been so much easier than having kids. Let me tell you, little people are far more work than being in the military. Right. Hands down.
Okay. So then what, like, how did you feel about your drinking? The pot was out of the picture. How were you feeling?
I enjoyed it. You know, I had a good time. Stupidity of youth. You know, I traveled the world and I don't remember any of it because it was all spent in bars and then going back to hotel rooms or back to the ship. So it's kind of a wasted voyage there, like I said, around the world. But I had a good time.
When everyone's doing it too, it's not this like, yeah, when it's the lifestyle.
Honestly, it was probably one of the high points of my life because it was the first time I think I felt truly like confident in myself. I think that was just the ASVAB, the test they have you take, the aptitude test, and getting me into the mechanics and stuff. I understood what I was doing and it worked with the way my brain works. And I was good at my job. And it wasn't like being a swim instructor or a hostess or waiting on tables. It was like using tools and running an engine room and doing all these things that I never would have done otherwise. But it gave me a confidence that I don't think I would personally have otherwise. It was awesome. I had a great time. But after 8 years, I was approaching the end of my 20s and I wanted to have kids, and staying in would have required deployments, leaving for 6 to 8 months at a time. And I didn't think I could handle that. People do it every day and God bless them. I don't know how they do it.
What a sacrifice, right?
It's a thing. Yeah. I left 3 dogs for a deployment and that was hard enough. I wasn't doing it with little people.
Totally. Yeah. I can't even imagine.
So I don't remember being concerned about my drinking, but it was definitely concerning in the fact that I've just learned about myself that if I do something, it tends to become habit. I drank on like a daily basis, even back then. And even when my husband and I got married and we bought a house and we weren't like in the ship environment, when I was working at Camp Pendleton at a hovercraft unit, I think it was like an hour drive to and from I commuted. And I was like 24, maybe, coming home every night. My husband worked second shift. So it was me and the dogs watching like WWE Monday Night Smackdown with a Monday Jack Night and Raw. Coke. Yeah. Like just sharing the drink and my own little party. But yeah, I didn't just do things occasionally. If I'm doing it, I do it every night or I don't do it at all.
Yeah.
So that did not set me up well for the almost like trauma of leaving the military and transitioning into a stay-at-home mom. I got out of the military like a couple months before my first child was born.
Ooh, that's rough. And you go from this thing that has built you up and you feel so confident and probably powerful, right, in the military and so much power. And then you go and that first baby, man, that rocks your world.
I didn't even think about that. And that was what I left because I left from the boot camp. You had 88 recruits, kids come from home. And in 9 weeks, you transformed these 88 individuals into like a cohesive unit. And it was
a lot of power,
a sense of accomplishment too. But like you saw what you did and you knew you did well at certain things. The things that you absolutely are going to have to wait like 20, 30 years to know in parenthood.
Totally. Yeah. When you have like tangible results, right? When you're like, okay, they are doing this or they're not doing that. Any sort of job, I would think you kind of have that, especially in the military, you have tangible results. In motherhood, there are no tangible results, especially when they're babies. Like, they have pee diapers and poop diapers. Like that is your tangible result. It's like, okay, yay.
Yes.
Great.
Going to work every day and having this community of people. And now all of a sudden I am in a house with this infant
that will not even sleep like in a bed or in a carrier, like nap, nothing. For 6 months, I swear, I just had to hold that kid and I couldn't mm-hmm. get things accomplished. And my husband's coming home, like, what's for dinner? And I'm like, I don't know. Do you know where the kitchen is? I don't know where the kitchen is. I've been sitting here all day trying to keep this little monster from yelling at me.
Yes. Oh my God. If I like close my eyes and think about that time, I can be back there so quickly, because especially with the first baby, you think that this is just life now. I did. I didn't know it was like finite. I didn't know, because you just don't know. You've never done this before. When you're like thrown just into motherhood like that and you have a baby who won't sleep, which mine wouldn't either. And like, oh, it's hell. It is hell.
Yeah. I was so lonely. I was alone. Yes. And I mean, family was like an hour or so away and I didn't realize that meant.
So hard.
Well, in my family, that means you pack up your infant and you drive, you know, to go visit them. So they were less than helpful.
Yes. Which is so hard. Like, we weren't meant to do this alone, right? Like, we were meant to have our community and the grandmas close and the aunts and uncles and the cousins and like the whole community. But that's just not how it is for so many of us. And it's so lonely and it's so hard.
Well, and looking back now, I can see how a lot of stuff did not friendship-wise transition over the years. Those girls that I would probably still be close with had I not branched off into all the pot smoking and the partying, if I had stuck with them, I would still be in their circle now. Like, they still, some of them are still close friends. But because I went off in a different route, and my route, those connections, you couldn't actually remember them the next day, do not translate into decades-long friendships.
Yes.
Yes. While 100%, there were some party groups that I ran with that, thank God, we took care of each other and we all needed taken care of in those moments. That does not translate to decades-long friendships.
Right. Yes.
And it was the same thing in the military. I had a group of girls, love them, but some of them I can go 5 years without talking to. I still reach out, but there's not this closeness.
Yeah.
So I really was on my own, and I did finally find a mom's group and I made some friends, but the drinking was still there, like the partying, and that was what we did on our time off. But that is what it has become.
Like, yeah.
We probably, our generation is the one that started making all these like mommy needs wine memes. And
yes,
because that's what it was. And I was so busy sitting around with the girls drinking wine. And I definitely think that was another part of the military. I did like hanging out with the guys is sometimes easier than making those relationships with girls. Especially I learned that in high school. Teenage girls are a lot. And
teenage girls. Yes.
I think I had enough of my, like, I was learning terminology. I'm a highly sensitive person. So when I have a lot going on, taking that on from other people, it's easier just to go out and get stoned with a bunch of guys than it is to sit in feelings with a bunch of teenage girls.
Well, and especially when they're so unpredictable. Teenage girls, right? I was the same way. I loved hanging out with my brother and his friends. I could hang out with them and I felt like right at home. Like, that was great. Teenage girls are tricky, especially if, you're highly sensitive and like you can't really manage those feelings. You're still trying to figure yourself out. Like, it's a lot. And then you can feel that way again in motherhood. No. Like, when you're like making new friends in motherhood.
And that's what made me think about it is like that mom's group. It was like, okay, it's like I was finally ready to try this again because, you know, I had groups of girlfriends in high school, but it was always a scary thing to me because what if you say the wrong thing? You know, they are paying attention. They are going to pick that shit apart behind your back later.
And you just feel not quite right and not quite like Yeah, like awkward and not good enough. And yeah, so alcohol really comes in handy, right? When you're like, okay, I'm lonely. I want to connect. This is the only way I know how. And then it also makes me not care.
100%. And so that was just so crazy. The overwhelm of motherhood and then, you know, still trying to party. And, you know, everybody has that in between where you're like, you don't want to let go of that side of yourself. And you're like, I can still be this person.
I'm still fun.
Yes. And then it just, the longer it drags out, the sadder and sadder it becomes, because I feel like it's a pretty common theme that it is like the partying out with friends slowly shifts to, if you keep right on this, you know, same direction, you start to notice that you can't trust yourself out. And so it becomes more alone and at home. And the shorter your ledge gets, the more you're heavily drinking by yourself. And I mean, God, I found a letter from 2015. I went to Miraval and they have you send a letter, or they write a letter and they send it 3 months later. 2015, I wrote in my letter, it is not okay that you have to drink 2 to 3 glasses of wine to fall asleep every single night. Mm. And I didn't seriously evaluate my drinking until 2022.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was in there. So the, also, you know my thing with Miraval, because I love Miraval, but I mean, talk about like mixed signals, because they push wine so much at Miraval.
Not in 2015. I was the problem in 2015.
Did they not have alcohol then?
Oh, they did. Okay. But their cheapest bottle of wine was $50. So my ass calls them and asks if it's okay to bring some. I brought my own box of wine and bottle of champagne to Miraval.
I mean, I'm sure you're not alone in that. Just let me just say. Because Miraval, it's very confusing. They're like, we need to balance and align our chakras and all of these things and equine therapy and like the deepest like soul clarifying exercises. And yet here, you know, have this wine and have the champagne. And here's a branded flask for you to take home. It's like, Wait, okay. Yeah, so that's interesting though. You know, I love this story where, you know, like deep down, right? You're like, this doesn't feel good and I don't like it. I don't know what the option is though. Like, obviously I'm not going to quit drinking because I'm not a quote unquote alcoholic. I'm not going to go to AA, right? And so really the only option we're left with is just to control it more or to moderate, which we know how that goes.
Well, and the back and forth of that is the worst, because I was telling somebody the other day, I started buying boxed wine in like 2011. Nobody knew how much I was drinking for over a decade, but did I still get up and do the things with my kids? Everything was still getting done. And I went back to school in like 2017 because I had money from the military, and my drinking did go down. My thing was 2 glasses of wine or 1 bourbon, one or the other, but you can't drink more than that to function. And I could do that. And so when I had a job outside of the house, I could never take it away, but I could scale it back. So that is like what drug this out so long, is the fact that I could.
Yes, exactly. That's why moderation's so hard, is that it works. Right? It's like gambling. It's like that intermittent reinforcement thing. Like, no one would gamble if they lost all the time, right? Yes, the idea that moderation, like that you can do it, right? That's what makes it so hard. Because then on those moments when like your guard is down or you're tired or something happens, maybe it was a party or it was a Thursday or it was sunny out or you were cold, like something happens, right? And then it doesn't work. Then it's like, well, what's wrong with me? Like, obviously I'm flawed, because why can't I do this 100% of the time?
Well, and then the pull is so strong, even when you do have those nights. I mean, I had a night where there's a winery close by and I went out with some women that were from my daughter's elementary school class. And it was my son's 4th grade year we were kind of freaking out because the poor kid had interests in death and he didn't like want to die, but he was curious about it. And it turns out he has autism. And when his brain goes down a hole, that's where it's at. But we didn't know that at the time. So I'm thinking my poor, sweet, you know, little boy wants to die. And I am like dying on the inside. My husband's never here because he's traveling for work. And I just want a fun night out with friends. Well, you know, of course it comes out, you know.
Yes.
A bottle of white in. So I'm like hysterically crying to these women who like only, well, one of which is my daughter's best friend's mom. And the other three like don't know me, but they live in my neighborhood. And so like there's this shit show night.
Yes. And
I mean, of course I was upset, but still these were not the people to be talking to about this. Woke up the next day, bruise on my shin, don't remember going to bed, and I am horrified. But was that enough? Nope. I mean,
Because like from the outside, you still haven't lost anything there, right? Other than what you're losing on the inside, the chipping away that we always talk about. But that, as far as society goes, is not enough, right? That just means you, Kelly, screwed up, which that is not true, right? That's what we're hopefully changing is that like, no, that wasn't you. And actually, I hear that story and like, I have those stories too, where I'm like, oh my God, oversharing with the, you know, bathroom attendant or people who I'm never going to see again, or worse, who I will see again.
Those are the ones that I'm like, some of those moms I still see around the neighborhood. And I'm like,
hi. Yes. And I just want to like give you a hug when I hear that story, because I'm like, you were just a mom who wanted connection and community and help dealing with something that is really like was troubling you as a mom. And like, of course you want that, right? Oh, and the fact that then the message we get is that no, you just didn't do that right. Like you got to try again, like just try again with alcohol later. There's something wrong with you if you can't control it all the time. Like that is what kills me.
Well, and also, you know, at that point I thought, well, maybe that would be I kept a cork from that night, like out on display for a year to remind me, like, you need to like pay attention and moderate. And like, it just, if I quit, then at least then it would have meant enough to me. So it was like, I wasn't horrified enough at myself to quit. And so I felt bad about that, but I still kept drinking. So I felt, it just, you're so stuck in this fucking hamster wheel.
I hope you can look back and at that time and have compassion for yourself of like why you didn't just quit, right? Like why that wasn't enough, because everything around us tells us that's not enough, you know? Like you haven't lost anything, right?
Oh, and people in your life, you know, I'm sure I told my best friend the next day and she, I'm certain, bless Natalie's heart, she was like, you were fine. And, you know, if you weren't fine, then fuck them. And, you know, it's them, not you. And so it just...
When really, like, it was the alcohol, right? It wasn't you. It wasn't them. It was the fucking alcohol. Like, that's it. But yes, it's so hard, I think, because we all have those stories. And like, even just like the cringe that I, like, I'm like, oh, how did I do that on my own stories, right? But then when I hear your stories, it's with such compassion of saying like, oh man, like, yeah, you were just in it. And we can never overlook the fact that alcohol is so addictive. And like we make these rules and like you see that cork, right? And you're like, okay, right. I'm not going to do that again because I know how I felt. But we make these rules when our brain is free from alcohol. And the second it touches it, it's going to change that. And it's going to change our decision making and our impulse control and everything.
Well, and I think that's what leads to the like the just drinking on my back porch then, you know, thereafter. Yes. And I mean, when COVID hit, you know, it was more just my circle, which was like a safe group. But even hanging out with them just became too much work. And it was just easier just to sit on myself. And then I didn't have to worry about over drinking and saying something stupid or making an ass out of myself or tripping over my own pant leg, which, by the way, still 100% do sober.
I know. I was going to say, I do that.
But it just is crazy how I cannot even like remember my teenage years, like other than going to bed at night, ever being alone. I just wanted to be around people so much. And then there I was 30 years later. I didn't even have it in me, which of course I hadn't been getting good sleep for 25 plus years. I was frigging exhausted from staying up late, drinking and watching Netflix, and then getting shitty sleep because of the drinking. I mean, no wonder I had no bandwidth because there was nothing left.
Totally. And when what you really wanted as a mom is community, right? And like, but like true community that like sees you and says like, no, you, not you when you're liquored up and not you when you don't care and not you when you're pretending, but just you are good enough, right? Right here, come as you are. And that's what alcohol does, is convinces us like, no, it's better to isolate because we're not going to risk embarrassment again, right? And we're not going to risk like saying the wrong things to the wrong people. We can't risk that. And so it's easier just to be alone, which is like the opposite of what you want.
Well, and also it becomes protective of the alcohol because yes, if people start to notice, I might actually have to pay attention to this. And it did get to the point where towards the end there, my husband was noticing because I didn't even want to hang out with him in the evenings anymore because was he going to pay attention to how often I went and refilled my cup? It's just so crazy looking back now how so much importance went to like getting out of my head, where how in the hell do you plan to like unfuck this like mess going on of all the things that happen day to day if all you do at the end of every day is like shut that shit down and pack it away. Like it's going to stay there forever. Like
forever.
You talk about the mold in the basement, like that shit is not going to work its way out, but it's this living in denial. And how do you, like the years just go by. I'm like, how did I spend 2/3 of my life where the goal of the end of every day was to get out of my head and like wash it away? And is that really how I want to move forward? And I think that is what finally got me to start looking at it, is reaching my 40s and having, you know, a kid hit high school and like realizing like these years with my kids at home is like a quarter of my life, hopefully, maybe a third, but do I really want to waste away? If I, you know, fucked off my teenage years and young 20s, so be it. But these are important years that are my kids' childhood. And so it's like, kind of like I used to smoke too. And once I learned the statistic that you had to hit 20 years of not smoking to have the same cancer risk as a non-smoker, I was like, holy fuck, I'm about to turn 44. If I want this to matter, it needs to be now.
Ooh, if I want this to matter, it needs to be now. Wow.
So, yeah, I drank away a lot of years and I have mixed emotions about the pandemic because like everybody else, it escalated. But that escalation was the like swift kick in the ass over the ledge I needed to realize that I needed to finally make some decisions about how I did want to live this next stage of my life. So I think, oh, I know what it was. Reddit. You know those Facebook videos of the computer reading off Reddit?
Wait, no. How do I not know these?
So basically it's just a computer animated thing that's reading off Reddit threads. And like once it's in your algorithm, you can spend hours listening. But that worked with doing stupid shit around my house, is I could just listen to Reddit conversations.
Wait, I did not. Okay, you might have just created a monster because I love Reddit, But yes, spending time reading those threads, like the Bravo Reddit threads, I love, but I did not know someone could read them to me.
Yes. What? I'm pretty sure it was a Reddit thread about a book that changed your life. And somebody put in there Alcohol Explained.
Oh, yes. Is that Craig Beck?
William Porter.
Yes. Okay.
So I read like a chapter and my mind was blown. And I was like, well, I'm just going to set this down.
Yeah.
I'm still going to drink.
Not yet. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You're like, okay, this is great, but not yet.
It took me over a year to pick that book back up again.
But it stayed there, right? It stayed there. It waited for you.
It planted the seed. And then that was like spring of 22. And then a few months later, I decided like, okay, I'm like, I'd been think slowly but surely that like those wheels turn in your head that you don't even know are turning. I was like, okay, I need to do something. So I searched more books and I found the famous, you know, Quit Like a Woman by Hallie Whittaker, which turned out to be exactly what I needed. Like, I did not need facts at that point. I needed to be fired the fuck up. I needed to be pissed off and not at myself for once. And so I read her book. I did not even finish her book. And I had my first attempt at quitting drinking. Her book fueled me for 3 weeks. Turns out you have to do follow-up work, but that was
no,
to come
but that's
later.
All like, yeah, that's a jump start, right? And how good does it feel? You said it felt so good to be pissed off, but not at myself. Like, I think that's huge that we can be pissed when we look at alcohol and like learn what it is and what it's done and everything it's taken. Like, yeah, you get fucking pissed off, and for once, you're not the problem, and you never were.
And it turns out like all of these things, even going back to the smoking, because I mean, I smoked for almost 30 years. The tobacco companies like actually had plans to target women. And so, I mean, it was an identity crisis. I had to realize that my teenage years, all of my fuck yous to the world were me poisoning myself. And I was tricked into that shit.
And lining the pockets of like really powerful, already rich.
Oh, rich white dudes sitting on their fucking yachts in Europe fueled their boats.
Yes. Oh, that's what gets me, man. You know, like that they're coming after moms and like being like, well, they're not going to know. They're too stupid to know. They need help. They're obviously struggling.
Well, and that's where I think they fucked up. Because we do talk.
I think so too. And we are too smart for them.
And we're too fucking tired to keep that shit in. Our filter stops working. We spill the shit out. And like, here we are. So that book fueled me. And, you know, there was backs and forths. You know, I did 3 weeks and I thought I could split a bottle of wine with my husband over dinner, which led back to 2 or 3 months of drinking. And then, you know, then there's Halloween where everybody's handing out shots as you trick or treat, because why isn't Halloween a drinking, you know, holiday for parents? It's just, it's so bizarre looking back at it now.
Yes. But that's good. That's good to share the back and forth, right? That it was all this long journey of like, and it wasn't this like, oh, I'm failing. It was like, oh, look, it was a noticing, right?
Well, and it was different things every time that brought me back to drinking. First, it was a date night because the romanticizing. Second, it was the stress of all of the trick-or-treating on a school night bullshit, which I think should be banned. Trick-or-treating should only be on Saturdays.
I feel like teachers would agree with that too. Like sending kids to school after trick-or-treating that day, like they're animals. They're monsters.
Yes. And just feeding people, changing them, getting them out the door. And so that was just a breaking point. And then the next time, a couple months later, when I, you know, decided I was done again, I made it once again. I think that time it was 25 days and it was a Saturday night boredom. Everybody was asleep. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to drink a bottle of wine. And I just, then there I was for another 3 months drinking every day. And then as we were approaching spring break, I was like, okay, like, this is it. Like, I'll have 10 days where there's no alarm clock. There's no like daily stress of all the things. And I'm like, I think I'm finally ready. And I was, and I just finally hit my stride. And I knew to like keep up with listening to the Quitlet and the podcast. And actually, I joined the Facebook page on my day one, March 10th of 2023. And so,
really? You started your spring break? Because when you said 10 days, no alarm clock, I'm thinking like this is your last hurrah. No.
No.
This was like, that's amazing. That, talk about deciding.
Yeah. I just was like, okay, like there's, no, it's not going to be the stress. So yes, there's going to be a lot of downtime, free time, but there isn't going to be the stress of like everything needs to be done so we can get out the door and show up for other people, because that's a whole different stress.
Totally. What a way to do it. That's great.
Well, and I was friggin' tired. My body like knew this time, because I mean, I think that first night I slept for like 15 hours.
Oh, so nice.
And I signed up. I did a year contract for yoga. I joined your Facebook page. And yeah. I just really was like, you know what? No, like one book, this will fuel us forever. Like I just started listening to the podcast, listening to books one after the other. I got on the Facebook page every day. And I still to this day have never posted anything, but I have commented probably 543 bajillion times.
I know. I'm like, you're so active over there. That is shocking. You have never commented or you've never posted.
Well, in the beginning, I couldn't do accountability. Like I didn't tell people I was going to stop drinking because I can't be told what to do. That has always been me. I think if like, what's it? ODD, oppositional defiant disorder. If that had been a thing when I was a kid, yeah. I totally would have been diagnosed.
Which is hilarious that you were a drill sergeant. I just got to say.
Well, but I was telling other people what to do. That was fun.
No, I know. But like, that's so funny. You're like, no, no, no. I will be the one telling you.
Oh yeah. This is on my time.
Yes, exactly. But no, I get that. And it can be scary. It can be scary, like putting it out there and saying like, this is what I'm doing.
I had disappointed myself enough. I could not like tolerate it from other people. I needed to like, I don't even think any of the time. Well, the first time I did tell my husband, because we got all the alcohol out of the house. Like we had like house sale. Like I posted on the neighborhood Facebook page, like, we're not keeping this shit in our house. Come take these glasses. Come take these bottles. And we had people coming in and out of the house all day. I'm like, take it. I'm done.
That's great. What a great way to do it.
I just needed it out. But I couldn't. And even on the Facebook page with strangers. But I think for some of us, though, even giving other people advice that we aren't taking ourselves helps beat it into our own self. Like if I'm being hard on myself all the time, if I'm telling every 10th person that posts on the Facebook page, no, you are worth it. No, you can do this. Then I think an inkling of that was getting repeated to myself. I couldn't say it to myself yet. You're worth it. You know, you're stronger than this. But if I can say it to you and I spend 2 hours a day, especially those first months, telling it to other people, there's a little bit that's seeping through into me and just going and going. And instead of drinking and watching Netflix every night, I wash my face, I stretch, and I listen to a sober podcast. And even if I listen to nothing sober all day long, here I am, you know, a year later, just that 20 to 30 minutes of people talking and reminding myself, today we took care of ourselves and we did not poison ourselves. Congratulations. Yes. You can go to bed. If I accomplished nothing else, then I did that. So
yes.
But yeah, it took me until 8 months to realize you lovely ladies were getting on Zooms. And actually it was 8 months to the day on November 10th, I joined the group. And, you know, it took me 44 years, but I found my fucking people. And you're it. I'm done looking for friends. Like I have what I need.
Oh my God, you're gonna make me cry. I'm so glad you found us and I'm so glad we found you. One of my favorite moments of the retreat was your shame seance and what you said. And it sticks with me all the time. And just, I adore you. Everything that you are, like awkward, like me, you know, like we're just showing up and you show up as yourself so beautifully and honest and you're so supportive. And you're just so, I hope that you see yourself the way we see you. Because we just love you so much.
apparently that's a life's work because.
Yes, it is. We're here to remind you. Anytime you forget, we'll remind you.
I need you people like dragging me along because I feel like some of the meetings, like everybody's just like, it's so sunshiny over here. And then I'm like, okay, like I realize she just said sobriety is wonderful, but you just said day 43. If it sucks and you want to die and you want to break things and throw things, that's okay too.
Yes.
Oh my God. So I'm like, I hate to be the downer here, but.
No, but it's just real, right?
Well, I know. And we need people like you all talking about the sunshiny parts, because if anybody listened to me talk about it, like the year of sobriety, getting to where I am, they'd be like, why in the fuck would I want to do that? Because you only talk about the bad part.
I don't think you do. You don't at all. You're just real. The way you can show up and tell the truth. I feel like you've reclaimed that power that you felt. Like you feel to me so powerful in your vulnerability. That is just such a gift to our community. And I couldn't thank you enough.
Well, thank you. And for having the bravery to do all this, because I don't know how you put yourself out there the way you do. Because I still don't post on the Facebook page. I comment still.
Which is so funny because she will come on here and tell her story, but the Facebook page is just too much. That's hilarious.
Now there's buildup. It's a year later. And I'm like, well, what do I have to say that it took a year to figure out?
We're gonna turn on notifications for Kelly. Everybody turn the notifications on. So when she posts, I'm not even on the Facebook page anymore, but you better believe I will run when you post. I will run and be the first one to comment.
Well, maybe I'll post this. Once you drop this, I'll post this. I'll be like,
yes.
Done. Oh. I'll talk in another year.
Yes, that'd be like a mic drop, man. You're like, I do one post a year and here it is. That's amazing. I just thank you so much, for real. And I hope you're in this group. I mean, you are forever, just so you know. You're in the group forever. Forever and ever, amen.
I plan to be showing up, saying awkward, dropping F-bombs. I always feel bad when people's kids pop up like 2 seconds later and like, oops.
Oh,
some people care about that.
No, same. I'm like, I hope you have your AirPods in because I swear a lot. Kelly, thank you.
Well, thank you. Again, for all of this.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Sober Mom Life. If you loved it, please rate and review it wherever you listen. 5 stars is amazing. Also, follow me on Instagram at The Sober Mom Life. Okay, I'll see you next week. I'm going to go reheat my coffee. Bye.
I'm Madeline, and I'm the host of the Happiest Sober podcast. I got sober in my 20s after a decade of gray area drinking, and the greatest plot twist of all time was realizing that alcohol, the thing that I thought made my life the most happy and fun and exciting, was actually the exact thing preventing me from living my happiest and best life. My mom is 40 years sober, and she joins me on my podcast very often. I like to call her my part-time co-host, and I also bring you solo episodes where I share my top tips, tricks, and mindset shifts in sobriety, and lots of how-tos for navigating all the things sober, from weddings to parties to holidays to bachelorette parties to trips. I'm also joined by so many guests who come on and share their sober stories, and they're all so, so inspiring. I'm here to show you that life doesn't end when you quit drinking. In fact, it's very much the opposite. And no matter what your relationship was with alcohol, life can be the absolute happiest when you're sober. New episodes come out every Tuesday. You can listen to Happiest Sober podcast wherever you get your podcasts.